Welcome to Pauly Malignaggi, from Brooklyn to the world.
Proudly representing his hometown of Brooklyn, New York.
Pauly Malignaggi takes you inside the ring and beyond.
I'm definitely far from shy. We're going to be ranting about a lot of stuff. Not just about boxing, I'm opinionated on life in general. Many sports topics and politics.
Pauly doesn't hold back.
The two-time world champion, Pauly the Magic Man.
Are you ready? From Brooklyn to the world.
Michael Buffer made a lot of money, didn't he?
He did. He's still making it.
Yeah, it's amazing. The best thing he ever did was Howard Stern show. I was like, let's get ready to smell each other's farts.
That's great.
All that stuff he did, that was you never heard all that stuff?
Oh, I listened to Howard religiously.
This is back in the day.
Time.
This is old school. Yeah,
so
back
that's,
in the day,
that's like my brother would know that for sure.
Oh yeah, Howard had him say all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. The guy made a living off of his voice, literally, and he's not a singer.
One liner too.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's awesome.
Hey, he is the man now. It is awesome. And his brother was doing UFC, right?
He still does.
Hey,
he
Bruce?
Still does.
Bruce
Buffer. I thought he was his son. Paul's like, what are you talking about, dude? They're like fucking 2 years apart. I'm like, I don't know. So is this episode 30? This is like the big 3-0.
Yeah.
Wow.
Woo!
And to celebrate, the fucking host is not here.
Oh, great.
That's good news.
At least we waited a couple minutes so people already downloaded before they stopped listening. What? Paulie's not on? This is bullshit.
Just keep listening, guys. He was supposed to be here, but I guess we're gonna call him. But for now,
you ever see the movie Clerks?
Clerks,
dude, you gotta see it's a classic.
Who's in it?
Kevin Smith's first movie. The director, he did like Mallrats and all that.
I heard of it. I know the movie.
That's actually his best movie, if you ask me. It's black and white. It's like set in New Jersey at a convenience store, and it was made for $25,000. It's hilarious. Just reminded me of that because one lead character kept saying, not even supposed to be here today.
Don't even make me laugh, dude.
Oh, that's right.
I fell off my bed in the middle of the night, in the middle of a dead sleep. I don't know if I was sleepwalking.
You sleep rolling.
Yeah, I slept rolled.
Jesus.
I feel like I have a fucking cyst on my ovaries.
Oh, no. You're not going to be able to have kids.
Yeah, I know.
Good thing you already have one.
Oh.
Don't tell your fiance.
Yeah. She was there. I think she kicked me off. My fucking ovaries are killing me.
Oh, God.
My pussy stinks.
Oh, geez, you always gotta go take that one step too far.
So what's going on, man?
All this douchey ESPN shows on in here.
Yeah, Bob. Bryce Harper won the MVP in the National League.
He's the man.
Cocky little prick. He is the man.
He killed it this year.
Wait, it's him.
Well, he learned how to lay off pitches. That's what they said is a big adjustment he made.
And Buster Posey's the man too, right?
Buster's been a man for a while.
Yeah, he's a beast. And then American League
You got some pulp in your eye or something? Some grapefruit?
I got cock in my eye.
You got a little spooch in your eye or something? They keep winking at me.
Donaldson from the Blue Jays won it. He beat out, I was going to say Austin Trout. Mike Trout.
He beat Austin Trout in the 11th round to win the MVP. It was a technical. I think they stopped it too soon,
yeah.
Honestly.
I'm a boxing fan, man. It just comes natural.
Well, we can appreciate that young talent, man. God, Bryce and Mike Trout are both like under 25 and just complete studs.
Trout's a monster. He's dying to be a Yankee, too.
He was one. They were a draft pick away. I think they were all set to get him.
My father-in-law says there's a reason why he didn't sign that super long deal.
No, I thought he did sign a deal.
No, he signed a deal, but he wouldn't sign that 10-year.
I thought he signed 10-year.
No.
I got to look. I'm going to do the fact-checking for that.
That's why we have you. You got the big fucking super monitor in front of you.
Super monitor! Hey, people told me today I look like Steve Jobs.
You do get
the turtleneck on.
Your fucking turtleneck, yeah. And your bald head.
And my bald
and
head.
And your glasses.
Jesus Christ, man. I used to have hair. I used to be pretty.
You used to have a coif?
I used to be somebody.
Yeah. You were a contender.
I was.
Now you're a fucking
palooka. Sons of bitches. Oh, man.
You're a poor man, Steve Jobs.
I said, somebody said that to me. I was like, I wish I had 1,000th of the money he had. I'd be set.
Speaking of which, driving over here, do you know they have the Apple store right here? It's like on 5th.
Oh, yeah, 57th and 5th. Yeah, I've been there.
Somebody was laid out. Cops, like, crossed it off. I'm like, wow, that Apple product is really something to die for, huh?
Oh! You're right. He only signed 6 years. 6 years, 144. 6 years,
yeah. They wanted to do, like, a 10-year deal. Yeah.
10-year,
I think the reasoning behind that is he's hoping that the Yankees will come with something.
Also, the salaries keep going up. So a guy locks in, oh, look, I'm making $25 million. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, this guy's half as good as me. He's making $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Especially in baseball.
Ridiculous salaries in baseball.
Yeah, it's fucking insane.
But they make the money. You know, it's because they have so many games. How are you not going to make money? You have 80 games. You got 30,000 people at every game.
Yeah.
And the ticket prices. You go to other cities, it's easy. It's so great. You go to Chicago and just got a ticket for $20 and I snuck down to the behind home plate. Someone's like, hey. I was like, don't turn around. Just sat there. Yeah.
Just sit there. Don't worry. Yeah. They're not going to do anything. No. Nobody else came to the game.
It's just New York. Right. You know, here you got to pay, you know, you got to give blood to get tickets and you got to pay so much money and it's ridiculous.
The best is that they only, these other cities only sell out when the Yankees go to town.
Right. That's true.
You know, in other news, my fucking Giants, man.
Oh, that's right.
What do you got to do to get a touchdown? I mean, I don't understand. Odell Beckham catches the
ball. How about the ball's coming right to you? Let me just jump as high as I can and land on my elbow and drop the ball. That would have ended the game.
Yeah, but what about before that?
But that was game over.
Yeah, of course.
I thought Beckham was a touchdown.
It's a, what do you got to do? Take the ball and go into the locker room with it? I mean, you got to take it home with you? And
he caught it on one foot, took another step. And then the guy's...
And he's out of bounds.
And I thought in slow motion it showed even more that he caught it. It's like, it's in my hands. I'm in the end zone.
Yeah.
I have it in my hands.
They say you got to break the plane. You see people barely even make it to the goal line. Oh, it broke the plane.
Yeah,
and then he loses
his finger over the line. It's a touchdown.
Touchdown! Right. Beckham catches it clearly in the end zone. He's about 5 yards in the end zone. Oh, no. He didn't have a... He didn't make a football move.
Well, you know, after that game, you know the Patriots are going undefeated now.
Like, yeah, and we always play them tough.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, don't sleep on the Giants to make the Super Bowl this year because the NFC is weak, weak, weak.
And weird, weird, weird.
Right. Yeah, Green Bay doesn't know
what they're doing. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Carolina's an overrated 9-0. Arizona, I think Giants would have a tough time going to Arizona.
You think Carolina's an overrated? I think they're good, man.
Obviously, if you're 9-0, you're good. I don't think they're 9-0 good. That's all.
A lot of people keep saying that. I just, their defense is really good.
Cam Newton is like, he's a good runner. He's learning how to win, but
he's starting to throw more. You know, he used to just bank on running.
He's not super accurate as a passer.
Yeah, well,
he really isn't.
He's not like an Eli or a Brady or, you know, he's not anything like that.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I just, until they beat someone, a really good team, you know, they beat Green Bay, but they almost gave it up.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the game. And Green Bay has not been playing well. So, I don't know, NFC and Seattle. If you look at Seattle's schedule, even though they just lost, they're probably going to make the playoffs.
You think so?
Their schedule is really bad.
Yeah, well, that helps.
Yeah.
But they suck, man.
It's amazing. They're the same guys on defense, right?
Pretty much, yeah. They didn't lose anybody defensively.
I don't know what happened.
They don't. You know what it is? I think everybody's...
Russell Wilson.
Everybody's on to him. You know what I mean? Like
him and Kaepernick were going to take over the league. I mean, these guys were in the Super Bowl. Kaepernick was in the Super Bowl. He just barely almost beat Seattle. Russell Wilson's in back-to-back Super Bowls. These guys, they had a lot of skills. Well, they don't continue to work. You know, they have a chance to make it back.
Look at RG3.
Right.
He's riding a bench.
Yeah. These guys, like, they got to keep working. I think their phone's ringing.
Is that our phone?
Yep. Say hello.
Hello.
What's a good word?
Oh, he's here now. Well, you made it.
What are we doing over here?
We're already on.
We're on in full effect?
You're on right now.
We started.
Huh. Excuse my tardiness to my own show, but have you guys been carrying the weight or what?
Sure.
It's been mostly me, honestly.
What's been the topic so far?
We started off by talking about Bryce Harper was the NL... MVP. And
you skipped something. He Pete hurt his ovaries last night.
I think I got a cyst on my ovaries.
So, yeah, Bryce Harper won the NL MVP, and I also saw today a highlight of Bryce Harper doesn't know how to pronounce the word meme. He said that he's going to have a lot of memes.
Well, that's French.
So,
maybe with the, as the title for his NL MVP award, they can teach him how to pronounce the word meme. Well, or, as the guys on ESPN said, he just went with the Hispanic pronunciation, memes.
No, that's French.
He didn't actually mispronounce it. He went with the Hispanic pronunciation.
Right.
That's for those of you to look at the glass half full. Let's say
he's bilingual.
Sure.
Well, you know, Washington Nationals used to play in Montreal.
That's what I said. That's the French one.
They speak French in Montreal.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It's not Spanish though.
It's close.
They're both
romance languages.
Well, yeah. I guess you could go that route. Yeah. I guess you could go that route.
What are you doing over there? How come you're not here?
Oh man.
What's going on?
Tough day working out. It's been making weight. A lot to do these days, because I had a day yesterday that didn't end until like midnight, and I went straight through. It was kind of a rough day. I've had a rough go of it. You know what I'm saying?
You can talk about it here. It's all right. You're with friends.
Yeah, so yesterday we did some sparring. Then I had to go to a fundraiser event for Eric Adams, who would like to run for New York City mayor. And, you know, he's been the Brooklyn Borough president for now, and he's tight with Brett Yormark from Barclays Center. So being that I'm tight with Brett Yormark from Barclays Center, I did it as a favor to Brett to show up to this event for Eric Adams in the city. And then from there, I had to actually make an appearance at the Teddy Atlas dinner, which was not in the city, which was not in Manhattan. It was in Staten Island. So I had to actually go to the opposite end get through everything and get to Staten Island and get there for this dinner. Al Heyman received an award, which didn't present it to him till the end, so I did not stay for the award. I mean, Al wasn't in attendance anyway. He had somebody from his team taking the award for him, but regardless, I was not going to stay till the end of the show because I was already on on a super long day, so I cut out early. But I just had to show my face, you know, and hang out for a little bit. It was cool. I sat next to John Starks, which is always pretty cool. Old New York, ex-New York Knicks shooting guard.
The dunk.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, you know. So we chatting a little bit. So that was cool, you know. I had a lot of people there. Danny Aiello there. Tony Danza and I had a chat with me. So he loved my commentating, which is always cool. Because you know, I told Tony I loved him on Who's the Boss and whatnot. And
don't forget about Tax.
Obviously, Tony's an ex-pro fighter, by the way, for those of you didn't know.
Absolutely.
So, he's talking to me about that, and he says, you know, he's talking about...
We lose you?
You guys there?
You there? Hey!
There you go.
Welcome to Brooklyn to the world.
Take the phone out of your ass.
That was part of the whole event, you know? But yeah, it's I'm a bit of an exhausting schedule. You know, this morning we did some drills at the gym, so I've worn out and whatnot. What's going on over there? What did I miss? Did you guys talk about last week's fight and whatnot?
No, we talked about we don't know anymore, according to the rules, what you got to do to score a touchdown, because clearly Odell Beckham had caught the ball about 5 yards deep in the end zone, and the refs weren't happy with that, and they still said it wasn't a touchdown.
Yeah, I saw that highlight. I saw the highlight, and I thought the refs were a little bit confused themselves. I thought Odell came down with the ball. I thought Odell came down with his feet. And I thought he made the catch. Like, if you get, I think at that point, the play's over and it's a touchdown. I mean, it doesn't matter if he gets stripped of the ball or not. Once you've established possession and you're across the goal line, the plane, I mean, which he clearly was, obviously he caught the ball in the end zone. That's it. It's a touchdown. The play's dead.
Yeah,
you know,
like
I don't
Seth.
What would it mean if you get stripped of the end zone afterwards, you know?
Yeah, like Seth was saying, Cam Newton, like, dives and his pinky and the tip of the ball touched the plane, and then the ball like rolls out of bounds, and they're like, "Oh, he touched the plane. That's
exactly
a touchdown."
Exactly. You know, that makes too much sense for that. You know, God forbid they actually went with the what makes more sense. You know, that makes too much sense for them to actually comprehend and understand and to make that comparison with a guy who's running the ball in and the guy who makes the catch in the end zone. You know, God forbid they actually make that comparison with the possession actually meaning the same thing. You know, it would only make too much sense. God forbid somebody would have one of those brainiacs over there would come up with that concept that, you know, maybe it is the same thing, you know? Once you've established possession across the goal line, whether it's by catch or whether it's by running across, it's the same shit at the end of the day. The touchdown, the play's over. that's the way it is, you know?
Giants had a lot of chances to win that game. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, they did. I mean, what's his name? Well, we'll drop that interception.
Collins.
We got a lot of winners, I'll tell you. A made interception. Who dropped it? Collins. Was it Collins or something?
Yeah.
And if he just was away from the ball, Cromartie was standing there right behind him.
Yeah.
But
come on, man. Come on. And then, speaking of the other kind of football, we had the European playoff, European qualifier playoffs. You know who got in? Hungary got in over Norway. We had, the Irish. Luck of the Irish. The Irish got in. Big shout out to the Irish fans out there. They got into the Euro 2016 next year. They eliminated Bosnia in home and away playoff. Denmark beat Sweden. I'm not really fond of either of those two teams because those two teams in 2004, during Italy's 2004 Euro Cup, they were in Italy's group, and there was a three-way tie at 5 points. So I'm going to make this story quick, but basically the only way for Italy to win and then not advance was for both Sweden and Denmark to tie, and they had to tie 2-2 or higher. They couldn't tie 1-1. They couldn't tie 0-0. So what happens in the Sweden versus Denmark game? It ends 2-2. Now, you're not going to tell me that. You're not going to tell me that game wasn't set up by those two, but you know we can't blame them outright for it. But I think it was pretty obvious. So Italy got sent home in 2004. I can remember Antonio Cassano scored the goal against Bulgaria, crying. So the fact that Sweden and Denmark were both in a playoff to enter Euro 2016, it made me happy that one of them had to go home. But I would have rather seen both of them go home because I have no sympathy for either of those two teams after that little tidbit that they gave us, they let us live with in 04. But it was Sweden that sent home Denmark. So we will get Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the Euro 2016. That's always a positive. We had Ireland. We had, I think Ukraine. I think Ukraine was you. Was Ukraine the other team? I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. I think Ukraine was the other team that got in. And like I said, Hungary over Norway in two legs. Hungary. I don't think I've ever seen Hungary qualify for any international tournament, which is crazy because I wasn't really for the Euro 2016 being a 2014 tournament because I can remember when the World Cup was a 2014 tournament. So I thought, I'm thinking like, you know, you're going to end up letting too many second-tier teams into the tournament and you're going to water down a tournament. I'm not really about that, you know? I'm not really all about that. But then you see a team like Holland couldn't even get in. The Netherlands, who have just been on a tear in recent international tournaments, I think they just their hot streak ran out. You know, in a tournament like Euro 2016, where it seems like everybody gets in, Holland still couldn't get in. So you know, it's been so it's kind of odd. You know, from one perspective, I think you know it's going to be a little bit watered down. But from the other perspective, even a team like Holland couldn't get in. So it's a little bit weird. You know, but hopefully it's a good tournament. You know, our hearts go out to those people in France and to all the people in France, and hopefully, you know, they can actually put together a very safe tournament next summer Euro 2016 because it is in France. France is hosting a tournament, and hopefully everything stays safe with that, and people are able to enjoy the tournament.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What I was going to say was you got ISIS blowing shit up in France. They're threatening to interfere with soccer games. Charlie Sheen has HIV. Ronda Rousey got knocked the fuck out. I mean, there's all kinds of shit too. Going on.
Yeah, and
the world
and
is
more.
Changing.
Michel Platini is suspended for 90 days by the FIFA committee for some kind of ethics ban, some kind of ethics impropriety.
Well, listen,
and he appealed that, and he still can't, and they overturned his appeal.
Listen, at the end of the day, I think President Obama needs to put down the basketball and pick up some fucking rifles.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I didn't think a Democrat, a Republican would have had a chance in office anymore in this country with the way the liberalism that the United States has had, the culture of the U.S. has had of late. But I think with situations, the possible wars and the possible and the threats of these terroristic situations, I think Republicans actually have a chance to come into office. You know, I'll be honest, man, I'm not really the one for the huge political conversation at times, but I don't know, bro. You need a no-bullshit president right now. You need a no-bullshit leader.
It comes down to safety, right? I mean, we got to feel safe. That's number one most important thing.
Man. It's kind of scary.
Everything else is bullshit.
It's something that it's kind of weird. You know, like, I didn't know that I wouldn't have never imagined I would be living in a time like this in my life, you know, where the world would be like this. It's kind of crazy. He's a bullshit kind of guy, you know.
These,
you need like a...
These ISIS people might get...
You need like a Vladimir Putin type of leader, honestly.
These ISIS people might get a moron like Trump voted in. That's fucking insane.
Yeah. But I don't know, bro. I mean, Trump's looking better and better right now. The more this crazy shit happens.
Yeah, Obama's sitting back like, well, let's just let this play out. All right.
Good idea.
The concerts just got blown up. There's like 300 people dead. All right. Well, let's just wait until next week and see what happens.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
It's sad. You know, I was watching an interview with the guy Assad, president of Syria. And he was saying how the U.S. is responsible for Al-Qaeda starting and ISIS starting. And I'm like, oh, I got to hear this. What's this guy going to say? And he basically said that ISIS, the guy that started ISIS, which he had some kind of weird name. I don't know his name. I'm not going to remember his name. But he said it was started in 2006 where he was training with the U.S. Military. And his people were training with the U.S. military because they were training people in Iraq to be overthrow Saddam's government and to basically have a new government, you know? So again, I mean, the U.S.'s zeal for overthrowing Saddam Hussein actually backfires because in the end of the day, that was the only guy that was kind of controlling these kind of revolts and these kind of rebellions, you know? You actually train these people, and then you actually overthrew the only guy that knew how to shut them down, and now you have this problem on your hands, you know? So it's sometimes that ain't minding your own business is the best case scenario. It's something our parents teach us when we're like probably 5 years old. And I think... in the case of world politics, sometimes minding your own business is your best... It's the best way to go.
They want their oil.
Yeah.
They want the oil. That's what they're going for, and it's not right.
And you know what? You didn't want to mind your business then. Don't mind it now. Get involved and fucking team up.
The problem. Now you have no choice but to be involved.
Now you just can't leave.
You didn't mind your business when you should have. Now you're in too deep. And that's the problem. Not being in too deep now. And now, you know, now you're in you have a full-scale assault going on here, you know? And the aggravation for someone like me is that we're the ones at risk. I mean, the guys in power aren't at risk. You know, they hang out in their White Houses. They hang out in there with their Secret Service agents. They hang out behind their security. You know, they make all the shit decisions, and then the ones that are at risk are the civilians, you know? We're the ones at risk. So that's the shit thing about it. That's kind of my input on that, you know? It's like...
I'm in Penn Station every night, man.
Huh? Yeah.
I'm in Penn Station every night.
Yeah,
it's a
man.
Big target.
Yeah, it's not a good feeling right now, man. It's not a good feeling right now to be. I'm sure it's not a good feeling to be a person from Paris right now. You know, they got to go through all the stuff that they've gone through, and you know, bless them, and hopefully they can come through this. People, I'm sure many people have lost loved ones and whatnot. You know, but. So many places are still under threat, you know. Well, London has been threatened. Now even Italy, Rome and Milan has been threatened. The Piazza Duomo has been threatened in Milan with the big cathedral. I was just there when I fought there. I went there with my manager. We went to check out the Piazza Duomo and we saw the huge cathedral. And it's the second time I had been there. But can you imagine, you're looking to blow up something like the cathedral at the Piazza Duomo. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like everything... You know what this reminds me of, honestly? It reminds me of, like, some kind of alien invasion movie. You know what I mean? Where it's like the human race against everybody else. And it's literally, like, these guys are, like, a different species, bro. Like, they want to take out everybody. Like, there's nobody they don't like. You know what I mean? They only like themselves. They actually don't even like themselves. No, they kill Muslims, too.
They fight amongst themselves, yep.
Like, I would take one.
It's like an alien invasion. The entire human race is at risk here.
I would take one for
the
team.
Human race. It's such a weird concept to me. It's so foreign to me. Like, dude, I just want to chill in my life, make money, get laid, hang out. Like, but imagine just going. I mean, you're going to live 70, 80 years in your life. That's it. You might as well have fun. You know what I mean? Like,
but I would
imagine living life and not trying to have fun, just looking to blow shit up constantly. Like, I just don't understand the concept. That's the thing. So I feel like, you know, it was a situation where people that you just should have minded your business and left them alone to begin with, and let the people in the Middle East deal with them. Somebody like Saddam Hussein, who obviously knew how to deal with them and did deal with them. And you know, it's kind of weird. You know, it's kind of weird.
I would take one for the team and blow Charlie Sheen. if that you would like put a resolution to all.
You would blow Charlie Sheen if that would resolve
to,
everything
to save the world.
You, to save
yeah,
the
but
world.
Would you blow Charlie Sheen knowing he had AIDS?
That's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not AIDS. It's
be a
just
tough
HIV.
One, yeah.
It's HIV. It's not AIDS.
I mean, it's got to be a tough one in general, but right. Then to know he has AIDS, it makes it even more tough, I'm sure. You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
No, before he found out he was into it. Now it's
I don't know. I don't know if that's the way to go, though. I don't know if that's going to answer. I don't know if that's going to really I don't know if that's going to really solve any of the situations, honestly.
If the ISIS people could watch.
I know the story, Seth. I don't think you know it. And obviously, our listeners don't know it. I remember a few years ago, I was getting ready to go to Hatton versus Sinchenko. And I was working the show for Primetime, I believe the network was. And I was also going there because if Hatton beats Sinchenko, I was going to fight Ricky Hatton in a rematch. So I remember going to Sicily, hanging out and seeing some family. And then my father says, why don't we take the catamaran, which is like a big boat, to Malta. And from there, you have a direct flight to Manchester. From Sicily, from Catania, you have to connect in London. It's not worth it. Why don't we take a catamaran, go to Malta the night before, hang out. And then the next morning, you leave and you go to Manchester from Malta. So I was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do it. So that was how I booked my trip. I'm on the catamaran before we take off into the Mediterranean, before we leave the dock.
You saw a guy blowing another guy?
I'm on the phone with Robert Diaz from Golden Boy at the time. And so I'm speaking to him and letting him know how I'm going to arrive in the morning and whatnot. And, you know, have a ride with me waiting for me and whatnot. And, you know, that I'll see them there, you know, because obviously they were dealing with everything because if Ricky would have won, I would have fought Ricky in a rematch and, you know, Golden Boy would have had the promotion and whatnot.
And he was blowing Charlie Sheen?
No.
Oh.
This has nothing to do with blowing Charlie Sheen.
Oh.
You're on some kind of trip today.
No, because you said it, this reminds you of a story. So I'm like,
Yeah, right. That was before you mentioned blowing Charlie Sheen. Sheen part, that was actually a little bit off topic to begin with.
But you better throw
that one in anyway. But
hey, right.
Whatever floats your boat, whatever puts your hair back, cuz.
Okay.
But I was getting ready to dock, getting ready to take off from the dock. And I'm speaking to him. Obviously, nobody speaks English in Sicily. Not that many people, you know, hear it. If you do, it's with a British accent. So I guess this big black guy, you know, muscular guy. He's about 6'4", 6'5", and he's on the catamaran. And I guess he had heard me speak English with an American accent. So he comes up to me, and he's like, because he put me on the phone, and he goes, hey, what's up, man? What's going on? Like, he's American. I can tell from his accent he's American, too. I'm like, oh, what's up, man? What's going on? He's like, oh, I heard you speaking on the phone. What's up, man? He gives me his name and whatnot. He was a cool guy. And we start talking, and he's basically giving me a real rundown. He's always in Europe because he has a daughter in Europe. He was in the ex-military, and, you know, he ended up having a daughter with a girl in Norway. But he likes to always, you know, go around Europe now that he's, you know, he's not in the military anymore, but he likes to tour Europe. He loves Europe. Basically, cool guy, you know. So we start talking, you know. It's an hour and a half ride on the catamaran. He starts talking to me about his experiences in the military because I asked him about him being in Iraq and whatnot because at that time, you know, he had told me about he had been in Iraq. And he actually ends up getting to the story where he tells me he was one of the court officers during the Saddam Hussein trial. Obviously, you know, everybody knows what happened to Saddam Hussein. He was captured and they tried him and they convicted him and they killed him. So during the Saddam Hussein trial, he said at one point Saddam Hussein gets up in the middle of this trial and he tells the judge, you people, you think I'm this tyrant. You people think I treat my people so badly. You think I treat them in an unfair way. You think I govern them and rule them very cruelly. He goes, what you don't realize is I have to rule them this way. You people will realize when I'm gone that I was correct from the start. I have to rule these people like this. You don't understand. This is the way you have to rule these people. Now, the guy finishes telling me the quote, then he looks at me and he says, you know what, bro? I think that guy was right.
That was
in 2012, okay? Now, 3 years later, I still think of the story that this ex-soldier tells me, and I think of that story, and I say, yep, he was definitely right. And I'm sure he thinks of that story. And the more time goes by, guess what? The more he realizes Saddam was right. We should have left the guy alone. Like, why are you going to, like, let sleeping dogs lie? You know what I'm saying?
Well, now we have because to kill those sleeping dogs.
Being crushed up in northern Iraq or in this part of Iraq or this part of Iraq. And I remember clearly CNN and, like, Fox News giving us reports about how cool Saddam Hussein was because he crushed some kind of revolt up in northern Iraq by mustard gassing everyone and killing the whole lot of them. And they used to, the propaganda on TV was how cruel he was and how mean he was and how vicious he was. Yeah, you forgot the little tidbit about the fact that he was probably crushing rebellions that were probably these pre-ISIS turning to ISIS terrorists. So the way to handle them was this way from the start. So you want to go not mind your business? Now you got yourself into deep shit. My problem with all of this is the deep shit is somebody like me. Because now I got an American passport. We all got American passports. You know, like, you're putting us at risk. Well, we don't need this in our life. You know what I mean? And that's my problem. I'm not a big politician with a big political conversation. But I don't need extra problems in my life with shit I didn't do. You know what I'm saying? With shit that could have all been avoided if you just minded your own fucking business. And that's my problem with all this. And now you've got a full-scale world war. Not a world war, but a world-level war. It's a different kind of a war because you're not dealing with a country. You're dealing with a weird, sophisticated organization that these guys basically don't care if they die themselves. And it's like I said before, it's almost like the human race against them. It's weird. Them against the human race. They literally want to eliminate everybody. It's such a weird concept, but it's what they believe in. And now you've allowed them to get this big to where now...
Fucking...
You know, now it's a problem.
Fucking morons. We should have just sent who was there to blow Saddam.
Yeah, I guess so, bro.
What is wrong with you?
Anyway, let's move on to other topics, bro. Enough of the political conversation. What about
DraftKings?
The Ronda Rousey losing last week. I know, Pete, you weren't too fond of her before the fight.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I told you, listen, I respect anybody that gets into a ring, an octagon, any sort of fighter that competes at any level. But when you believe your own hype, because it's all she was clearly is fucking hype.
That's a little harsh.
No, it is. Watch the fucking fight, bro. Watch the fight. She sucks. She got her fucking ass kicked.
Yes.
And this guy on the phone was telling me, bro, Holly Holm wasn't even a good boxer. Get out of here. I said, dude, this fucking broad doesn't even like, she doesn't like to get punched in the face. I just want to see her get punched in the fucking face. Mm-hmm. I said it before the fight. And it turns out I was right.
Did you bet it?
I fucking did.
Yeah? Locksmith. Ding, 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 ding. Locksmith.
Ding, ding,
locksmith.
Ding.
What odds? I'm a witness to it, yep.
What odds did you get on that?
He did have Ollie, yep.
It was plus $1,000. $50 got me $500.
Oh, that's beautiful.
A nice little friendly $50. Nothing crazy.
Oh, God.
Nothing crazy.
But, yo, I got to be honest. I was a bit disappointed. Not, you know, listen, we all win some. You win some, you lose some, as Floyd Mayweather said when they asked him about this situation. But I was a bit disappointed in the fact that her conditioning was a bit lacking, you know? You know, you win some or lose some, you come fully prepared, and you know what? You know, it doesn't go your way. You know, sometimes that happens. You know, at a world-class level, a big fight, you know, sometimes you're going to win, sometimes you're going to lose. The issue I had with it was she was dead tired after about 30, 45 seconds. I mean, literally gasping with her mouth open for air. Because this was a fight where I didn't expect it to go to last 20, 30 seconds like the rest of them or even less. You know, I did expect it to go a little longer. But I thought eventually it was a fight where Ronda would eventually catch up to Holly and submit her, you know? And I thought it would take a little bit longer, but she would get there. When I realized Ronda was exhausted after 30, 45 seconds, I said, yo, you need energy to be able to submit somebody. You know, you need to be physically strong enough to be able to put them in that lock and submit them. If you're exhausted, you're not going to have the physical capabilities to lock somebody up. And I was right. I mean, once I saw her mouth wide open and she was gasping, taking deep breaths of air after like 30, 40 seconds, I'm like, bro, you know what? Even if she does close the distance on her, I mean, she's going to have to work so hard to lock her up. I don't know if she'll be able to do it. And you know what? She did catch up to Holly two or three times, you know, and Holly broke out of the lock every time. But exhaustion will do that to you, man. Your form falls apart. You have no more strength, and everything you've trained for is nothing. The conditioning is the backbone of everything. It's like, go for a damn jog, really? Like, just go for a jog, or two, or three. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, if you're that tired after 30, 40 seconds, you didn't jog a day in your life, or at least a day in that training camp, for sure.
What about that great head movement from Ronda?
No, I don't even knock that because here's why, Pete.
She got hit with every fucking punch possible.
A top-notch stand-up fighter. I didn't expect Ronda to...
I know, but what's her pad guy doing for all this time?
I know, but
just collecting a free check?
I don't expect Ronda to be able to throw hands with somebody who's been throwing hands for half her life.
I know, but at least fucking, like you said, put your hands up, move your head a little bit.
I hear you. I understand, but here's the thing. I think the plan for Ronda always had to be not to try to box with Holly, just try to avoid enough of Holly's big shots to where you can spear her and get her down.
Right.
What was the spear? I mean, I don't even see one attempt at a spear to bring Holly down at all.
Right.
You know, what do you think? She was just going to play into your hands and you were just going to submit her like some of these other girls? You know, I don't know.
That's the problem.
I'm curious about the game plan, you know, because
no game.
I think,
it's horrible
I think
game
Ronda
plan.
could have put herself in a position to wind up with the submission at a certain point. But again, it goes back to conditioning anyway. I mean, no matter what, if she wasn't conditioned, it was never going to happen regardless. But say for argument's sake, even if the conditioning wasn't a factor, you know, I thought Ronda was going to have to still, you know, avoid enough of the big shots on her way in to eventually submit Holly. When you train stand-up, in a stand-up situation and you're not a stand-up fighter, you basically want to learn the defense first. And I think, like Holly, with the ground fighting, she didn't learn how to ground fight with Ronda. She basically learned how to defend it. Because anytime you learn a new art, you want to learn the defense of it first. You don't learn the attack first. Anybody can fucking learn attack. You got to learn the defense first.
That's Holly, like Chuck Liddell.
Holly
Chuck Liddell survived.
And get out of those locks from Ronda. Now, mix in with the fact that Ronda's exhausted already, and Holly was also able to, you know, use whatever schooling she had and breaking out of those locks. But she did, you know, because Holly, whatever she learned in submission work, she wasn't going to attempt to take on a truer professional at that who's on another level of submission. She was just going to use what she knew to defend herself against it and bring it back to her advantages, which was stand-up fighting. So Ronda, from her end, I don't think her best weapon is to, let me learn my stand-up and let me beat her up standing.
No, of course.
Ronda's best position to beat Holly Holm is still on the ground. It's just, can she defend good enough at the stand-up game to where eventually bring the fight to the ground and have enough energy left when you bring the fight to the ground to put her in that submission? That's Ronda's game. You got to be true to who you are. It's just a matter of being defensively apt enough when you are standing up, because the fight has to start standing up and you have to take it to the ground. You know, and this is kind of the thing. I mean, I think women's MMA is coming to the forefront now, and Ronda's a big part of that, you know, but and from that respect, I mean, women's MMA is almost at the point where men's MMA was 25 years ago, where if you knew one art and you were very good at it, like Royce Gracie knew the ground fighting only, and you're able to win, and you're able to be the best for a little bit of time. And then what happened to Royce Gracie? At a certain point, guys started getting better, and you had guys like Chuck Liddell who knew how to avoid being taken down.
That's what Holly Holm did. She took the... Holly Holm took the Chuck Liddell approach. Like,
no, well, what? There's something Liddell used to do. I forgot the term of it. What is it called?
It's sprawl.
Help me out here, guys.
Sprawl.
Sprawl, yes. Thanks, Pete. That's why I love you. You think of shit. So, yeah. So, you know, the sprawl. And, you know, guys started using the sprawl tactic to keep the fight on the stand-up game. And the Liddell era came where a lot of guys were winning who were standing up. And then it kind of molded to where, you know what? You got to be good at both stand-up and submission in order to be good in an MMA. In order to be a top MMA fighter, you need a little bit of both. So in the male side of the sport, if you're not good at both the ground and stand up, granted, you're gonna have your one advantage where you're better at one than you are at the other. But you need to be skilled at both in the male MMA world. That wasn't the case 25 years ago. In the female MMA world, we're finally starting to get to that next level to where Ronda was just good at the ground game and there was nobody else that could compete with it. But now we have somebody like Holly who's shown that if she can keep the fight standing up, she can start to dominate. So now the sport is getting to evolve a little bit. I want to see how Ronda adjust in a rematch, and I want to see how these other girls come in and start to also adjust in their training as well, and the sport can keep growing and evolving as well, because women's MMA is obviously growing in huge numbers as well. I mean, they had 70,000 people in that stadium, bro.
But listen, 70, like I said,
people in that stadium in Australia. I mean,
but listen,
it's a credit to the athletes.
I know,
to Holly Holman, to Ronda Rousey, especially. Ronda, it was obviously Ronda's name. I mean, let's face it, we're talking about this right now because Ronda Rousey got beat, and she wasn't supposed to get beat. So, you know, you have to credit Ronda Rousey for taking this to the level that it's been taken to. And
no,
about the rematch, I have my own opinions about how she's supposed to.
Dude, listen,
I don't think you fight Holly Holm standing up at all. But I think you have to work on your defense, because I don't think Holly Holm missed a punch cleanly at all. The entire fight, I don't think Holly Holm missed one punch. Literally. I mean, every
dude,
time
you gotta listen. You gotta listen. You gotta listen. It's the fucking media, okay? And
of
it's
course.
So sickening. Okay, do me a favor, Seth, our producer, our fact checker.
Yeah.
Can you Google? I'm pretty sure his name is
Google.
Josh Barnett.
I know Josh Barnett.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's Ronda Rousey's boyfriend, okay?
No, that's not her boyfriend.
They're dating.
Travis something, her boyfriend.
Yeah, Travis, whatever. Google his fucking name, please.
Okay, settle down.
The guy's a heavyweight, okay? This is why she's a douchebag, and this is why she doesn't respect her own. She
Travis
doesn't respect
Brown.
Travis Brown, okay? Isn't he like a fucking heavyweight?
He is 6'7", 254.
6'7", 254. Okay, let me give you a little reality. Douchebag, you called out Floyd Mayweather, who's the best fighter to ever put on gloves. You said you could beat him. You just got your fucking wig pushed back by Holly Holm. You date Travis Brown, who can't beat Cain Velasquez. Okay, there's an article before she got her wig pushed back by Holly Holm saying that she believes she could beat Cain Velasquez. Is this fucking girl?
She said that?
Yes. It's on my Facebook. This is a fucking joke of a person, dude. Talk about believing your own hype, and the media takes it and publishes it and applauds her for her confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think
it's a joke,
you know,
dude.
Sometimes
it's a joke.
My learning experiences.
Subliminally you're actually saying
ago, says it.
Subliminally, you're actually saying you could beat up your MMA boyfriend who's 6'7", 250, because he can't beat Cain Velasquez.
Yeah, yeah.
That's basically, in other words, what you're saying. The girl is a fucking egotistical maniac, and she's delusional.
I think she, you know, I think this experience will serve to possibly, if she's mentally strong, she'll have learned from this. And she'll become better from it, and she'll improve from this if she's mentally strong. If she was all about the ego, like you're saying, Pete, then you know what? This will only spin her out of control even more. You know, but if she's mentally strong and she has that self belief, and she will have learned from this, because there's a lot to learn from this. Obviously, from the mentality she had, all the way to the approach she had into the fights. You know, also coming to the ring really angry. I mean, I know it makes for a good look promotionally, but when you come into the ring really angry, you're not going to react very well, especially to a person that makes you pay for your aggression. Holly Holm made her pay for all her aggression. I mean,
right.
Holly Holm walked her into every punch she was wanted to, and it wasn't even that difficult for Holly to do. So, from that perspective, the approach has to change a little bit. I think Ronda has a particular set of skills that can win her a lot of fights, and if she makes some adjustments, she can even win the rematch. But she will definitely have needed to have learned from this, from all of this, for sure.
You get posted,
you know,
4-1.
I do think some people are a bit hard on her. You know what? I mean, I can see some of the criticism. You know, if I have a criticism for Ronda is, after the fight, she was always a bit of a rough sport, you know. I think
right.
Before the fight, it's all good. You want to talk about it, whatever you want to talk about. Talk trash. I mean, I know I've been a part of some rough promotions myself. And you know what? It's all part of the competition. Competition can get ugly. And when you want to be the best, you know, sometimes it gets ugly. And both people want to be the best. But when it's over, I believe it's always good to be sporty and a good sport. And when it's over, I'm always all for that. And on more than one occasion, I've seen Ronda not be a good sport when the fight was over. So there was one thing where maybe I would like to see was Ronda being a good sport when the fights were over, because she had it out for Holly as well. And if she would have beat Holly, would she have been a good sport, or would she have been the typical Ronda and talk more more trash.
Exactly. Maybe she should watch the replay and watch how classy and a great sport Holly was after shocking the fucking world as a 10-1 underdog. Instead of going nuts, Holly's sitting there making sure that this fucking douchebag is okay. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Class act. She's a class act.
She is a class act.
Yeah, so credit to Holly for that. I just think Holly has just more combat experience in general, so she gets that part of it. She understands that part of it, and she gets that.
Ronda's a bully,
Ronda
though.
Ronda still has to learn that part of it, and Ronda still, you know.
Paulie, she's a bully. She's a bully.
I get it. But you know what? She's still young enough to understand it and change her mentality is what I'm saying. You know, I mean, I get it. She was being a bully. You know, and a lot of times she was being a bully. But when you're young enough to still understand the concept and then you can change your mentality, she's you know, Holly has more combat experience. I think Holly also is a good sport because she's done this for so long, whether it be in boxing or MMA. She understands the fact that, you know, there's a respect factor for anybody you compete against once the fight is over. You know what I mean?
Sometimes I've never seen
the fire's burning too much and it's out of control and you need to control it a little better. Maybe Ronda will have learned from this.
Right, but I've never seen anybody do what Ronda does.
I saw Leila Ali. Leila Ali used to fight bum after bum, and then she used to complain about that they couldn't last, and then she used to complain when the fights got stopped. In the meantime, Ann Wolf was waiting the whole time, like, yo, if you're really that mad about stopping bums, just fight somebody who's not that easy to stop.
No, but I'm saying, did she go over and talk trash to the person?
Leila used to complain and yell. Watch Layla's knockouts. Leila used to fight people you never heard of, and then stop them, and then be mad when their fights got stopped. When there was options to fight better fighters. Like, if you're that mad about fights getting stopped, just fight better fighters. They're out there. They want to fight you. Just do it then. You know what I mean? So, Ronda's not the first one that did this. And again, Leila did a lot for women's boxing, too, so no complaints. It is what it is. But at the end of the day, I saw somebody like Lady Gaga, for example, tweeted about Ronda. Oh, that's what you get for not touching gloves. Yo, bro, again, I said after the fight. Before the fight, there's been times I didn't touch gloves if I was allowed to not touch gloves. I always, if I touch gloves, I barely touch gloves. Like, I put one hand out as I'm turning back towards my corner. Like, that's how I touch gloves. Like, touching gloves before the fight is just a part of the to make it look like it's good sports. But in that moment, the two combatants are about to tear each other up, and that's all they're thinking about is tearing each other up. So they don't even want to touch gloves. So the whole touching gloves thing, if you're not in the mind of a fighter in that moment before a fight, you can't understand how little it really means. After a fight, it's different. But before a fight, like, anybody who's mad about Ronda not touching gloves before the fight is a fucking moron. Because, first of all, it's what most fighters will do, or if they're allowed to not touch gloves, they probably wouldn't. You know what I mean? Like, there's been fights where I didn't touch gloves. There's been fights where I didn't touch gloves, and the referee called me back. As a matter of fact, it happened to me with my father, Miguel Cotto. Like, me and Cotto, at the stare down, I turned around, I didn't touch the gloves. Smoller called me back to the middle of the ring to touch gloves, you know? Because in boxing, you have to touch them at a certain point. So, you know, through the years, now I just stick one hand out while I'm turning back to my corner. Literally, as I'm touching the gloves, I'm turning back to my corner already, you know, to go wait for the belt to ring, you know? Because that's how disinterested I am in touching gloves in that moment. You know what I mean? Like, in that moment, you're in combat mode. So the touching glove, you're not about to be friends when in 25 seconds you're about to be swapping punches. So you have to understand the mind of a fighter in that moment. So I don't knock the not touching gloves before the fight. I really don't.
No, I don't.
Some people do. I don't. But after the fight, I do. After the fight, I got to be honest.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I'm you know, I'm all about sportsmanship after the fight, because at the end of the day, everyone is brothers and sisters in arms that go step into a ring and fight or step into an octagon and fight. You know, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, I think the respect for each other is important, because you're both sweating, it's blood, sweat, and tears for the living that you guys are making, and you're doing it with beat against each other or against other combatants, and there needs to be that mutual respect when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I don't knock, because some people can control their emotions. They can touch gloves and still come out there and rip your head off. So if you do or you don't, I don't look at you any kind of way. But, yeah, after, you always should be a good sport after the fight. If you don't touch gloves, I don't look at you like, oh, what a dick. Because I, especially working with you all the years, you never touch gloves.
And it also sends a message to your opponent, you know, like, you know what?
Yeah, you're here to fucking fight. We're not friends, you know.
We're not friends right now. Yeah. You know, this isn't a sparring session. This isn't a play date. You know, so if I don't want to touch gloves, then, you know, or if I'm barely going to touch your gloves, it is what it is. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm going to, you know, you never know about it. I'm not here to play, you know? So, And I'm sure you're not your play either, because, you know, I've had opponents do the same thing to me. So it's regardless. I mean, more, as a matter of fact, most fighters think like me. I'm sorry to anybody that might not understand it. Most fighters will think like me. Most fighters will understand what I'm talking about. But regardless, so that's at the end of the day, that's the thoughts on the Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm fight. But I think it sets up quite an interesting rematch. A lot to think about. I mean, a lot of people are already writing Ronda off.
Hey, guys, Vegas made her 4-1 favorite, Ronda, and it quickly went down to 3-1 because a lot of money came in.
A rematch?
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. They're just not going to get this one.
And
huh?
for those of our listeners who like to bet, we have a Professor Vegas podcast. That's where I heard it on. He reported the odds on it. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what? Let's talk about Eric T. Schneiderman.
We lost our reads.
you're a jerk off. You're a cocksucker.
We got one left.
You're a dickhead. And on that note,
I hope you trip in the shower.
Yeah. Everyone else who's not in New York, go to DraftKings. And you could play any sport, daily fantasy.
We lost our read, no?
No, we got it today. We got it today. We got one more. This is the last one. The last time we're going to talk about DraftKings. Paul E.M.
All right, so Seth, give it to him. Give it to him with our promo code.
Yeah. Plenty of football left. DraftKings. Play where you want, when you want, players you want. DraftKings is the shit. Pete will tell you, is it the shit?
It's the best thing ever.
Yeah, DraftKings is awesome. Unfortunately, New Yorkers can't play, but I live in New Jersey. DraftKings all day, bitch, is my house.
You suck, man.
So much money up for grabs. Every game is a big game. Just pick your contest, draft your players, collect your winnings. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Here's your call to action. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and turn your love of football into a life-changing payday. Use the promo code.
Paul E.M.
P-A-U-L-I-E-M. P-A-U-L-I-E-M.
Yes.
Hurry up, because in New York, we're not going to have that for long.
play for free with your first deposit in Sunday's $1 million fantasy football contest. First place takes home 100 grand. Enter Paul E.M. for free entry now only at DraftKings.com. We'll miss you, DraftKings.com.
Seth.
P-A-U-L-I-E-M. Promo code.
I'm always looking to, like get a little, like... a little beat the system in some way. And
yeah.
A guy like fucking jerk off Eric T. fucking Schneiderman.
Yeah, like seriously, bro. You know
can
what
I
mean?
Can I
look
get like a fucking
federal money always spending on dumb shit like this? Like, we got people looking to blow shit up and we're worrying about DraftKings in New York.
Can I, you know, because you're a New Jersey
country, bro.
You're a New Jersey resident.
Away. Like, you're spending, put all your funds that you have dedicated to these federal investigations and put them all towards terrorism. Forget stupid shit like DraftKings investigations, because nothing's going on. You're not going to catch anything worthwhile.
Can I get a bank card and like under your address?
Sure.
And just fucking play, continue to play DraftKings.
That's horrible.
It might sound a bit degenerate, as England Steve might say, but I want to fucking play, mate.
Right? Right.
Yeah. I'm missing out on fucking DraftKings as of like next week, right? Listen, the judge told the douchebag he's not going to claim it as illegal until it goes to actual court, which is the 25th, if I'm not mistaken. So that's next week.
Glad they rushed that to court.
Yeah. So as of right now, New Yorkers, we could play. I'm playing this Sunday. I don't give a flying fuck what Eric T. Schneiderman has to say. You jerk off. You fucking dickhead. But after that,
I booked him for next week's show.
I think I'm fucked. Yeah. No. Book him. I'm gonna like accidentally spill my fucking Amstel all over his fucking suit.
Oh. You accidentally drop your beer bottle on his head too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Did that split your fucking head open?
Crack a bottle.
Yeah. I'm sorry. How'd you get that gash?
There's a lot of hate and dislike for Eric T. Schneiderman. Yeah,
he hates Eric Schneiderman more than he hates ISIS. He didn't react this way when we were talking about ISIS. He's more angry about
Why
Eric.
Why can't ISIS go after a fucking idiot like him?
Yeah.
You're bombing innocent people that are trying to enjoy a concert. Get this fucking moron. The guy's trying to take fantasy fucking away from everybody in New York.
Yeah. That's funny.
ISIS. His name is Eric T. Schneiderman.
We have a lot of ISIS listeners. Say they love Pauly. They love. Hopefully, they will not be at your next fight. I hope they will not be at your next fight.
So yeah, I mean, I think the word's pretty much leaked out that we're. I mean, it looks like we're on the December 12th card. No, I mean, have we discussed this yet?
Oh well, not that it's official.
Not that it's official, but I mean, it's all over the internet.
I'm getting tweets about
Twitter,
it.
Is it
unofficially
like,
official?
I mean,
it's unofficially
I've had preliminary conversations. I mean, I've spoken to the guys about booking us flights to London. So I mean, I think we're on the card. You know, I think we're on the card for the European title.
You bring that belt home, man. Bring it home.
Against Gianluca Bronco, yeah.
And bring that belt to the studio.
Yeah, we will. We're gonna do it like that. So, you know, look forward to having the British fans out there, full ruckus and full support. Don't give Gianluca Bronco any love, because we don't need to. Just show me some love, and look forward to performing. I've actually had a pretty good training camp so far. I've been sparring with Eric Bonet, who's getting ready himself for a fight with Chris Algieri. So, I've been putting up some good work, good rounds. And so I think that's what's been missing for a lot of the fights I've been training for this year, unfortunately, for the Garcia fight. And not to make excuses, but you know, you got to look at where you got to make improvements. You got to look at where you got to do things better and make certain changes and whatnot. And obviously, it wasn't necessarily that certain changes were needed, but the change that was needed was from the Garcia game was that I needed sparring. And obviously, I kind of knew that already, but you know, the Garcia game, having had suffered that bad cut in the fight in the camp before that, eliminated the intense sparring that I needed to get ready for Garcia and to prepare for Garcia, because if I got cut during the Garcia camp, I would have lost out on a lot of money. So, you know,
you actually did.
In the moment you do accept that fight and you hear about the money and you accept that fight, you know what? You feel like, you know what? You may be able to get ready and you're going to be able to do it right. And you know what? I felt like I had a good camp. Aside from the lack of sparring, I felt like I did have a good camp. But what sparring does is it raises your level an extra notch or two notches, you know, because you don't have a bad day on the pads. You don't have a bad day on the heavy bag. You have bad days in sparring. And those force you to excel and become better, force you to make adjustments and become better. They also raise your level of intensity. They also better your timing. They also make you more reactive and improve your reactions. They make you meaner, just in general. So, you know, I've always been a guy who's relied on a lot of heavy sparring. I've always been a pro sparring guy. You know, some guys are different. You know, some guys don't like to spar a lot. Some guys don't like to spar heavy. I've always been a very pro heavy sparring guy. Like, I've always liked sparring good fighters. I've always liked to prepare for fights sparring good fighters. I've always liked to prepare for fights doing a lot of rounds with sparring with good fighters, with intense work. And so that's kind of how I've always got my reflexes the way I've needed them and my eyes at their sharpest. And it was this situation where this year I haven't been able to do that the way I needed to at the right moment, you know. And again, it's not even making excuses. Garcia did what he had to do against me, and all credit to him. You know, it's a great team, and that's a great sport, and he fought a great fighter, and he's a great fighter. But I got to look at myself just like they got to look at their own performances and how they, you know, every fighter looks at their own performances. Whether they win, whether they lose, they look at their own performances, and they take the good and the bad out of it. Well, I got to look at my own performance and judge it from my own perspective. And from my own perspective, the sparring was definitely something I needed. And I've always known that. Again, I didn't take the fight against Garcia figuring I would lose it, but I took the fight with Garcia knowing I wouldn't get the sparring I needed because of the eye. Having said that, still, it's not an excuse, because I didn't say, oh, you know what, I'm going to lose this fight, but I'll take it for the money. I didn't do that. I'd be lying to you if I did that. I really believe that I could properly prepare even without too much intense sparring, you know. But now that I'm getting the intense sparring and I'm back at that kind of a training camp, and I'm back, I've been helping Bonet get ready for his fight, and then, you know, this fight kind of got signed on the December 12th card for myself, you know, I realized just how much of a difference there is in my timing and whatnot. And I look forward to December 12th, and I look forward to, granted it's a fight I'm supposed to win anyway, but I just look forward to seeing how my reaction is and how my timing is and whatnot, because I've been feeling good in the gym, and I look forward to putting in the work in front of the British fans, and hopefully it's loud, it's ruckus. I love the singing crowd. I love the singing chants. I love the atmosphere, and I can't wait to be in the O2 Arena on December 12th.
Yeah,
and,
you actually.
Hopefully, it's a packed, very loud house, and a lot of good fighters on that card. You know, my buddy Kevin Mitchell's on that card. Anthony Joshua is an up-and-coming guy, and Dylan White's obviously a good fighter too. So that main event should be interesting as well. And I'm sure I'm missing a lot of the other guys that are on the card as well. I've heard a lot of names on that card, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
You actually forget that you're a stubborn prick, and for the Danny fight, you said you were gonna spar when you weren't supposed to, and you had two great rounds where you didn't get touched, and then you got scraped with the tape of the glove, and you actually slightly opened up the cut again.
Yeah, of course, which is why I couldn't spar, you know?
Yeah.
When I tried to spar in this car, see, it came to cut reopened. And so we had to shut down sparring again because we risked that if it reopened too close to the fight, we weren't going to be able to fight. And so that would have been just a waste of time, you know, where you accept a fight for good money and then you don't even get paid for it or you don't even get to fight or anything. So then I had to kind of realize that, you know what, sparring is just not going to happen for this camp, you know.
And on another note, if you lose to Bronco, our studio is on the 44th floor. We just open the window and you just jump right out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Willingly, too.
Thank you.
Willingly.
I have to go to the roof. The windows don't open.
I'm too sharp. Honestly, I'm too sharp right now. Like, I feel good. And again, it's not just anything about Bronco or whatnot. You know, he's a two-time European champion. You got to respect him and whatnot, but I feel really good.
As Meek Mill says, there's levels to this shit.
Yeah, obviously, props to Eric Bonet, who was getting ready himself for his own fight. So, in helping him out, I got myself sharp, and then I got this fight offered to me. So it's good timing. It works out. Eric's fight is on the 5th. My fight's on the 12th. So it works out. It kind of works out perfectly, you know what I mean? But I was kind of already sparring with Eric, and this came up. So
yeah, that always helps.
Yeah.
We're going to get ready to wrap up. Before we do that, actually, as we speak, if I'm not mistaken, there is a weigh-in going on.
There is,
for Miguel Cotto and Canelo for tomorrow's showdown, pay-per-view showdown. This is a mega fight. This is, I believe, is going to do sick numbers pay-per-view wise. I pick Canelo. I have to go with the younger, naturally bigger guy. I gotta go with Canelo, man. I'm a big Cotto fan. I respect him a lot. Over the years of watching him, I think he's great. He's achieved so much, but here it is on the computer. It's not them right now, but it is the weigh-in.
Yeah.
Big heavyweight guy. Who you going with?
You know, my heart wants Miguel to win because, you know, I'm cool with him.
Right.
Through the years, obviously, there's a lot of respect having fought him and whatnot.
Right.
And, you know, I was pulled for him because he's a guy that I've grown to respect and have admiration for, as well as
build
a friendship with. Having said that, my brain tells me Canelo, he's the naturally bigger man. He's fresher. People say, yeah, Cotto will box. That's what would happen when Lara boxed Canelo. But when Lara is the kind of boxer that can actually box going backwards, Cotto moves, but to throw and to actually fire all punches, he needs to stop moving. So he plants and fires. That planting and firing off that movement will eventually be enough to make him wind up in a war. Lara avoids the war because he's able to fire off shots planted, and then he's also able to fire off shots while he's not planted, and it keeps him in motion, it keeps him changing the angle. Cotto's a good boxer, but he's not a pure boxer because he's a guy who wants to take your head off at the end of the day. Ultimately, I think he'll get sucked into that kind of fight, and then getting sucked into that kind of fight, the bigger man has the advantage. The naturally bigger man has the advantage, and the naturally bigger man, despite Cotto being the middleweight champion, or going in, at least he was, Canelo is the naturally bigger man, has been campaigning at the heavier weights for most of his career. And I think in that kind of a firefight, it's Canelo. Canelo for me, too.
And like you said, you say war, but in Canelo's defense, it's an educated war.
He's not a typical Mexican that's going to sit there and bang.
No, what I expect, well, honestly, I don't expect a full-out war, but I do expect some heated exchanges.
Right.
And then Canelo to force Cotto into those heated exchanges more than becomes comfortable for Miguel, because the smaller man is always less comfortable in the exchanges, especially as the damage starts to take effect. Both guys are great body punchers. Both guys have great left hooks, both to the head and body. And I feel like... you know, we're in for some pretty good violent exchanges
fireworks.
And good violent boxing. I think the fight will be a good fight regardless, but in the end, I see Canelo winning the fight.
The real winners are the fans, for sure, no matter what happens.
But you see Dan Rayfield comment today that he said there hasn't been a big buzz about the fight, and if there hasn't been a lot of push for the fight, and if he's actually blaming Roc Nation for this, because he said, you know, what is Jay-Z doing anyway? I mean, he hasn't so much as even tweeted about this fight. And there's a very big lack of buzz in Vegas. And I haven't just heard it from Canelo, from Rayfield. I've actually heard it from Tom Hauser as well. There's just not as much of a buzz as they expected in Vegas. But, you know, who knows? Maybe today with the weigh-in, there was more of a buzz. But at the end of the day, he was saying that if this doesn't do the numbers it does, or that Roc Nation can't afford to make money and still pay Cotto, they have only themselves to blame and their boss to blame, who, like he said, didn't even so much as tweet about this fight once, even yet, with the fight being tomorrow.
Yeah, that's weird. Surprises me. He went and visited Miguel in camp, and I'm surprised he didn't tweet or do anything about it. I mean,
yeah,
Golden Boy's side is doing a lot about it, and
the tweeting is the least you have to do. I mean,
of course,
minimum. There's a lot more than tweeting involved. He hasn't done any of that, including the tweeting.
Right. You know, no, I know.
So it is a bit weird, but
that's surprising.
Yeah. But
especially the COO is Dave Iskowitz, who's been in the business forever. That surprises me a little bit.
We'll see what kind of numbers it does.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited for some of the undercard. I know Guillermo Rodondo's on the undercard. You know, he's always a class to watch.
Takashi
Miura versus Francisco Vargas fight for me is also a nice barn burner, exciting fight, and I'm excited about it too because I got to meet Takashi Miura when I was in Tokyo a few weeks ago. A classy guy and a diligent worker in the gym, has a reputation for being a puncher out there. So they told me he's a big puncher, and watch out when he fights Vargas because his power is going to make a difference. But Vargas himself is one of those stubborn Mexican fighters who is a pretty solid combination puncher and goes well for the body. So, you know, and those Mexican fighters, one thing about them, they tend to have good chins too. So if he rides it out and he starts ripping to the body of Miura, it could get interesting there too. So, I look forward to that fight as well. I think it's got a solid fight written all over it.
Yeah, I hope I'm right when I say Cotto versus Canelo. You shouldn't have to really advertise as much as a lot of other fights because I think their records and their names precede them.
Yeah, they do, but that's for the boxing fans. You also want non-boxing fans or casual boxing fans to know this fight's happening, and you want them to watch it because this is the kind of card where I think that, you know, even casual fans can appreciate it once it's on, you know, but they got to know it's on. You know what I mean? Like, all boxing fans will know it's on. So you don't even have to promote it much for boxing fans to understand that it's on and want to watch it because they know the styles, they know the backgrounds already.
The problem is they got burned for Mayweather.
This is the kind of card where you want non-boxing fans or casual boxing fans to grasp on because, you know, this is the kind of card where, you know, it could be entertaining for everybody.
They got ripped off from the Mayweather Pacquiao fight. They're not going to lay out that money again.
They sure did, but if they would have listened to me, they were going to bet Mayweather and just made their money anyway.
True,
you know what I mean?
True.
So, you only got ripped off from Mayweather Pacquiao if you didn't bet me, if you didn't take my advice.
Well, there's still going to be a fight party at our house.
At the end of the day, maybe the only thing you would have got ripped off for in that fight was your entertainment value. But for your money value, you definitely wouldn't have got ripped off. But that's another conversation for
fight
another
party
day.
At the house.
On that note, is that a wrap for us today?
Yeah, Seth is crying. He wants to go home. Seth, you didn't give us your pick.
I like Canelo by stoppage, eighth round.
I said late.
All three of us agree.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, come on. I mean, it's just it just makes too much sense. It's hard to pick Cotto in this fight.
Hey, man, I'm not disagreeing with you. You heard my pick. But, all right. And that's it, man.
Episode 30.
Was that episode number 30 today?
Yep. Episode 30.
The big 3-0.
The big 3-0.
Nice.
Hey, you broke the cherry.
Thanks to our loyal listeners. I know last week we had a barn burner of an episode. We can't always give you that kind of episode, but, you know,
Oh, you missed
it. I'm sure our opinionated values will offend some, but frankly, we don't care whether you're offended or not, as long as you're listening.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
We're out.
Boom. Over and out.